legislature adopted a statute pursuant to its police powers to require the insurance industry to pay by means of assessments a large portion of the cost, the state's cost, in regulating those insurance companies. The Intermediate Court of Appeals has held that that statutory scheme is facially unconstitutional because the public is a beneficiary of insurance regulation. In so holding, the Intermediate Court of Appeals gravely erred, set back jurisprudence to perhaps 1930 or 1870, and misread grossly this court's opinion in the Medeiros case. It is important to make certain that the holding of the ICA is clearly set forth. The ICA said at page 12 of their slip opinion, the assessment levied here do not survive scrutiny under Medeiros because the regulation of the insurance industry directly benefits the public at large, not the insurers who pay the assessments. The public is the primary beneficiary of regulation, and the insurers themselves, if anything, are only incidental beneficiaries. We can see that the state regulates pursuant to its police power to benefit the public. We could not argue anything else. The insurance code in section 1-102 says the business of insurance is one affected by the public interest. In Article 14, dealing with rate regulation, section 14-101 of chapter 431, the purpose is to promote the public welfare, so among other things, rates are not excessive. The state does not have to, pursuant to its police power, and in order to justify regulatory fees on a regulated industry, demonstrate that there is a tangible benefit that flows to the regulated party, although there certainly is here. As the Supreme Court of California said in the Sinclair case, in approving regulatory fees levied upon the paint industry with regard to the childhood lead poisoning prevention program, and I quote, regulatory fees in amounts necessary to carry out the regulation's purpose are valid despite the absence of any perceived benefit accruing to the fee payers. And one does not need to use a lot of imagination to imagine or to look at many regulated industries where the regulation may not benefit the regulated at all. We do not regulate, for example, those who sell alcohol in order to benefit them. We regulate them in order to benefit to the public, and we do not have to say that bars and taverns and package stores derive a benefit from regulation that stops them from selling to minors in order to charge them for the cost of the ABC regulation. But the respondents in this case say quite clearly, and I quote from page 88 of the record below, volume 4, Medeiros requires close to a quid pro quo of cost to benefit. We could never show that. And we concede that. How could we possibly bring in an economist to read the 500 pages of the insurance code and say, well, if there were no insurance code, insurers would make less, and thus you've shown a quid pro quo for some benefit. In order to achieve this result, the respondents argue that the Medeiros case set a test involving regulatory fees. It most surely did not. In Medeiros, the court was dealing with a statute from the city and county which specifically said a service fee of $250 for services performed by the city in connection with the arrest, processing, investigation, and prosecution of the convicted person shall be assessed.
Assuming that it's difficult to fault the ICA because Medeiros was the precedent that they faced. But assuming that this is a regulatory fee, what about the amounts that were transferred from the insurance fund into the general fund? Should that those monies be refunded in some way to the insurers or back into the insurance fund?
Well, Your Honor, we have three arguments with regard to that. First, the court never reached this question below. The court decided this case on summary judgment and specifically said that she was not relying in any way on these transfers.
Same constituent age indicated that
she was denying the plaintiff's motion for summary judgment. And so those, as at least as to those counts, she was ruling on whether or not the transfer was valid or not.
In our favor. She ruled in our favor on those counts. As to plaintiff's counts, she said she did not consider the transfer.
So she did rule on it.
I think it's fair to say that she was basically saying she really wasn't taking them into account, but she wasn't holding specifically the statutory scheme that allowed for the transfers illegal. So our second argument would be, however, that the respondents never proved it was their money. Even if they had proved it was their money, we don't think that helps them. Mr. Chief Justice, if I may turn it short.
Yes.
For anyone on the court whose eyesight is as good as mine, I've handed out basically the printout of this chart, all of which comes from the record. Judge Pollack at the summary judgment at the preliminary hearing denied the motion for a preliminary hearing and said at paragraph 16 of his order, plaintiff is not likely to show that the fund does not, at a minimum, include an amount equal to $2 million that is attributable to transfers from other funds and income from fees, fines, penalties, and reimbursements that were collected by or on behalf of the insurance division. As this chart demonstrates, over the 3 years for which the record is complete, there were total revenues to the insurance fund from fees, fines, penalties, and assessments of $21.8 million. The assessments themselves were only $13.4 million, or 61%. So the revenues minus the assessments, just for those 3 years, the insurance division took in $8.4 million in additional revenues. So the plaintiffs never demonstrated that the $3.5 million that was transferred out of the special fund by the legislature was their money. In addition to this particular $8 million, the record also makes clear that there were positive prior year adjustments from reversals of encumbrances, funds transferred from captive insurance companies, and funds transferred from other special funds that had gone out of existence. Now, while it might not have been wise in a political sense for the legislature to have taken this money, including the $3 million from an expired fund, that's their judgment to make. And even if taking the plaintiff's assessments would have somehow, in a post hoc, ergo proctor hoc analysis, rendered the assessments unconstitutional, which we definitely say they did not, the plaintiffs never showed that this was their money. So the fact that the legislature may have taken money that may have been someone else's or may have been a small part of their money does not give the plaintiffs the ability to claim that the statutory scheme itself was unconstitutional.
Mr. Bennett, as a matter of proof of facts, is there any way that the HIC could possibly prove that a particular dollar transferred from the special fund to the general fund was its money?
Well, Your Honor, that's exactly why we believe that what the HIC should have done was to take advantage of the administrative remedy they had to seek a refund if they believed that they were charged monies in excess of that amount allowed by law, reasonably proportionate or a reasonable relationship.
My question wasn't rhetorical. So your answer to it is what?
My answer to it is, Your Honor, the test that we believe that the court should employ would be one that would say that the government has to show that the charge is reasonably proportionate to the cost of regulation.
No, I'm sorry. My question came on the heels of your suggestion that the plaintiffs never demonstrated that the money transferred was theirs. My question to you is whether, as a matter of proof of facts, it would be possible for the plaintiffs to do that.
Now, on these facts, if there weren't this huge amount of additional money in the fund, then the plaintiffs could demonstrate, well, we're the only ones who put the money in the fund, and so obviously the money that came out of the fund was ours. But the legislature has the discretion to decide if a fund has excess monies in it.
And all monies in the fund, the repository for the funds generated for the purpose of regulation of various industries, including insurance industries, I take it in your view, constituted the exaction of regulatory fees as opposed to taxes.
Absolutely.
All right. You are asking us to enlarge the Medeiros test to encompass the San Juan Cellular test, the Medeiros test to apply primarily to user fees, the San Juan Cellular test to apply primarily to regulatory fees.
Yes, sir.
Do you agree that the executive branch does not have the power to tax?
Yes, sir. And what we believe, in fact, is that the language in Medeiros simply needs to be changed in a very minor way to make it clear that it applies to regulatory fees. In Medeiros, the first part of the test was applied to the direct beneficiary of a particular service.
Now, how can a regulatory fee, if every dollar in the special fund, whether it came from the the members of the HIC or not, derived from regulatory fees as opposed to taxes, how can monies transferred from the special fund to the general fund be transformed into taxes?
Well, they can't, Your Honor.
Ah, so any money that is transferred from the special fund into the general fund is regulatory fee revenue transferred into the general fund to be used for general taxation purposes.
Well, Your Honor, what we would suggest is that there is not in any way unlimited authority to take money, because the Medeiros test applied to regulatory fees would require that the money be used to defray the cost of regulation and that the charges be reasonably proportionate to the cost of regulation. So if, in fact, you assess a regulatory fee to pay for A, B, C, and D, and the legislature took the money that you assessed, and then you went right back and assessed again to pay for A, B, C, and D again, we would agree that that would violate the test. If you tried to charge the insurance company multiple times for the same exact regulation, because as soon as you get the money in, the legislature takes it, then once you try it the second time, it is not a valid regulatory fee because it's not reasonably proportionate to the cost of regulation. But the burden is on the regulated to demonstrate that the money that was taken was, in fact, somehow meant that the assessments that came after that weren't reasonably proportionate to the cost of regulation. It would obviously be completely unfair to the regulated to allow the government to charge more than once for the exact same regulation, and the state taking the money time after time out of the fund, if it's their money, and then charging them again for the same thing could result in an illegal regulatory fee because it's not reasonably proportionate to the cost of regulation. But there's not the slightest bit of evidence on this record that that's what happened here, that the insurance companies were ever charged anything more than monies, than amounts that were reasonably proportionate to the cost of regulation. And the legislature set up a statutory scheme that allows them to bring exactly that argument to bear by filing for a refund.
Isn't it tautologically self-evident that if monies exacted for the purpose of regulatory fees are transferred into the general fund to be used as general tax revenues, then whoever it was who paid the regulatory fees transferred were being disproportionately had with respect to monies ultimately finding their way into the general fund?
No, Your Honor. If the monies that they paid were used to defray the cost of regulation, and the monies charged were in fact reasonably proportionate to the cost of regulation, then what they were assessed was a valid regulatory fee. If the regulator tries to charge them twice for the same exact regulation, then quite clearly what they're being charged is not reasonably proportionate to the cost of regulation. But because they didn't demonstrate here that it was their money that was taken, or that what they were charged wasn't precisely what they ought to be charged for the cost of regulation, as is demonstrated on this chart, the expenses of the insurance division in each year exceeded the amount of the assessment. Exceeded the amount of the assessment by some millions of dollars. In fiscal 2000, the assessments were $3.8 million. The expenses of running the department were $4.6 million. In 01, 2.8 as opposed to 5.8. And in 02, 6.7 as opposed to 8.3.
So for purposes of paying their own way, so to speak, are you suggesting that, in fact, the various insurers underpaid for the cost of their regulation rather than overpaid?
Well, what I'm suggesting is that the legislature decided that it was going to give them credit in terms of the assessments for fines, fees that other people were paying. It said that the cost of regulation to start with is going to be this amount minus the other money that comes in minus what we take out. So if you start with the point where if the legislature had said you have to pay for everything, they would have paid far more money than they paid here, and this would have been entirely constitutional. The legislature said,
so the insurers did underpay.
Well, they didn't, because they paid pursuant to the way the legislature decided to charge them. The legislature could have charged them more, but chose out of grace, not requirement, to charge them less. The legislature isn't required to charge the insurance companies the entire cost of running the insurance division, but it could have had it chosen to. So the fact that it chose...
Did you make this argument in your briefs?
We argued, Your Honor, in our brief.
You argued that, as a matter of fact, the assessments against the insurance company were far less than what it took to administer the division.
What I would say we argued in our brief, Your Honor, quote that, is that we noted that the assessments were based upon the monies that would be required after the fees, fines.
Did you argue that this theory before the ICA?
Your Honor, before the ICA, what we argued specifically was that the insurance, at our opening brief at 1, that the insurance division depends on assessments and fees, fines, penalties, and reimbursements. At 3, and I think this is to your point.
Didn't the trial court say, as far as accounting was concerned, it was not going to reach that question and stay any introduction of evidence with respect to the claim for accounting?
It did, but Your Honor, to go to your previous point, at page 3 of our opening brief, we said, and I quote, the amount of the assessments collected never exceeded the special fund ceiling and represented just a fraction of the total cost of operating the division, close quote. So we did specifically say that in our brief, and in our cert petition at 5, we said the insurance division based the total amount of the assessments on the division's budget as reduced by other sources of income. So we did make this argument, although I don't believe we presented these mathematical calculations, because this was not ruled against us in the circuit court. What I would also...
Where does the reserve amount fit in? Is it the assessment?
The testimony below and the record below demonstrated that the insurance division, a staff, decided how long a reserve it wanted to have and factored that in to its budget. Now, if in fact...
Where does it fit into your chart?
The reserve.
How much did they collect for the reserves? Did they have an account for the reserves?
No.
For 10 months?
They got up to the testimony below was that they got up to a reserve of about 10 months, but there wasn't a separate sub-account to account for the reserve. What they did was they figured the reserve into the amount of the budget. And what our argument with regard to the reserve would be, Your Honor, is the statute specifically requires that the assessment bear a reasonable relationship to the cost of regulating the line or type of insurance. And if the insurers believed that there was an unreasonable amount assessed in order to build up a reserve, at one point the goal in the last administration was 2 years, then they had a remedy. They could seek a refund claiming that...
What I'm asking you is where does the amount, whatever the amount was, for 10 months fit into your chart?
It doesn't fit into the chart except...
What was the amount collected for the reserves? How much was it?
Your Honor, I'm not sure the record contains that number, but the amount of the assessments is in the record, and the reserve amount, I believe that it would have amounted to several million dollars that the division wanted to keep in the fund at the end. The record does contain, for example, what the amount in the fund was at the end of several years. If the court were to look at page 278 of volume 1 of the record, it would show, for example, that at the end of 2001, the amount remaining in the fund was $5.8 million, but that included all of these transfers. But to the extent...
Was any of the amounts from the reserve transferred?
Because the amounts that were set aside to build the reserve were just simply kept in the sub-account or were kept in the insurance regulation fund before the compliance resolution fund was established in 2002, there's just one account and one sub-account. So the amounts in the fund or in the sub-account certainly included the amounts that the commissioner had decided to assess as part of the reserve. But our argument on that is...
So your answer is you don't know.
Well, my...
Any amounts from the reserve were transferred to the federal fund?
I think, Your Honor, that it would depend on how you looked at the amounts that were transferred to the general fund. Our argument would be the plaintiffs didn't demonstrate that any amounts that they paid in were transferred to the general fund. I believe that the insurance commissioner's view was that what the legislature took was money that she and then he had set aside to constitute part of the reserve. So I think the answer to your question is, in the view of the insurance commissioners, the legislature took money that they wanted in the fund as part of the reserve. And I believe that was the testimony below, and I think that was the testimony before the legislature. They asked the legislature, don't take the money because we want to keep it there. But there is no evidence in the record that they assessed again to rebuild the reserve to where it was before. And in fact, the positive evidence below was that it was not. The plaintiffs have also argued in this case that the legislature's decision to charge the fund for the overhead of the Department of Commerce and Consumer Affairs was somehow unconstitutional. We don't understand this argument. The funds had administrative expenses that the legislature mandated that they pay for out of the special fund. There was no argument below that the expenses weren't really incurred. So the fact the legislature says you need to pay for the costs of the Department of Commerce and Consumer Affairs that are attributable to insurance regulation, there's nothing in the slightest unconstitutional about that.
Mr. Bennett, to speaking personally, for present purposes, I'm not particularly concerned about the issue of the assessments, so long as the assessments are deemed the exaction of regulatory fees. And I'm not particularly concerned about quantifying actual expense. What I am concerned about are the transfers. If we were to adopt the San Juan Cellular test for determining whether a periodic fee is a regulatory fee or a tax, three conditions have to be satisfied. One, a a regulatory agency assesses the fee. In this case, the insurance division, yes, for present purposes. Two, the agency places the money in a special fund. That was done. Three, the money is not used for a general purpose. That's not true of the transfers, is it?
Well, the money that was transferred out was used for a general purpose. That is unquestionably so. If you adopted that part of the San Juan cellular test and money that someone paid as an assessment was used for general purposes, that would be something the legislature would lack the power to do.
Revenues cannot be simultaneously a regulatory fee and a tax, can they?
No. But in this case, again, factually, on the record before this court, there is no evidence that the monies that were used for the assessments were not used to defray the agency's costs. And while it is conceivable that that could be an issue on remand, the monies transferred were not used. There is no evidence that those monies were part of the monies that were assessed. The monies that were paid as part of the assessment were clearly used to defray the agency's costs. And that's the state of the record, although there was never a factual finding to that extent by the circuit court. But on the state of the record before this court, we believe that there is no possibility that the insurers could demonstrate that, in fact, their assessments were transferred to the general fund. But beyond that,
about pro rata theory,
if we don't believe they could factually make that claim, but even if they could, Your Honor, their remedy under the law would have been to file for a refund. There was a statutory scheme that was set up that allowed them specifically to file for a refund. Judge Pollack asked, they argued to Judge Pollack, there was no mechanism. The statute said you could file for a refund. And they said there's no mechanism. And Judge Pollack said to them, well, you don't know really until you try. They claimed below that a letter that they had added, that Robin Campagnano, and it's at 4-104 through 4-107 in September of 2002, Robin Campagnano, on behalf of the Insurers Council, wrote a letter to Governor Cayetano, which essentially said, Dear Governor Cayetano, if you take this money out of the fund, we're going to sue you. Have a nice holiday, Robin. And they argued below that that constituted a request for a refund. They argued that at page 84 of volume 4 of the record. It clearly does not. They had an obligation, if they felt that they were overcharged because of this transfer, to file for a refund. Certainly, if the court makes it clear that this can't happen in the future with their assessments, that will govern what will happen in the future with regard to transfers from special funds. But as to this $3.5 million, there is no reason why they should not be held to the statutory scheme the legislature established, which included, if you want it, go ask for it. Thank you.
I have one question. You make the argument that there's no jurisdiction in this court because the fisher filed a tax form. So what is the basis for that assertion?
Well, I'm hoping, Your Honor, that that assertion will fail because I'm hoping that the court will rule that these were regulatory.
You make it anyway, though.
We make it in the alternative and have always made it in the alternative. We've said these are regulatory fees, not taxes, but if plaintiffs are right and these are taxes, they picked the wrong courthouse. It is our hope that this court will adopt our first argument that these were valid regulatory fees under the police powers and will not need to reach the second argument. If there are no further questions, Chief Justice Menendez.
HRS 431-15C states money divided by the commission in the fund shall not be referred to the general fund. And when the legislature passed the act to transfer X number of dollars, did it repeal this decision?
No, Your Honor. As we argued below, two things. First of all, revert is a term of art in the statutes. There are funds that revert to the general fund. This money did not revert. It was passed. It was transferred to the general fund pursuant to positive legislation where the legislature mandated that these funds be taken from this fund, so it did not revert. But even if somehow that were not true, which it isn't, one statute only lasts so long as the legislature decides to leave it alone. So even if there were some bar on reversions, if the legislature the next day passes a statute which essentially says any other law which we've passed to the contrary notwithstanding, we're taking $1.5 million, it can't be contrary to law because the law is as the legislature declares it on the day the legislature passes its newest statute, and one legislature cannot bind the next by statutory means. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning. May I please support? My name is Lisa Munger, and I want to introduce to the court Jessica Michelson, who's been instrumental in assisting me to prepare for the argument today. Your Honors, as you correctly noted, the argument that you see before you on these charts was not made to the circuit court in connection with the summary judgment motions, was not made to the Intermediate Court of Appeals in connection with the appeal of that decision, nor was it made in the cert petition prepared and accepted by this court. What I would like to address, and I think it bears a moment to stop and think how this assessment was made, what brought us to this point today. We challenged this assessment because, not because this was a regulatory fee, but because what happened here is that after the first $2 million transfer by the legislature to the general fund was the very first moment that these insurance companies knew the basis on which they were assessed, how much was being assessed, and what was happening to that money. There was no way for any member, when they received their bill, to know what was happening. And in fact, the record below demonstrates that when a couple members received a bill that increased 262% in 1 year, called the insurance division, emailed the insurance division, and asked, why has my bill gone up so much? They were not given a full and accurate picture. They were told, well, our income wasn't as great as we expected, and that's why we had to increase it. In fact, the testimony under oath was that it was in a period when the insurance commissioner was building up a huge reserve fund. That was why the assessments increased so much. So let's look back to what the insurance commissioner did. The insurance commissioner was charged by the legislature of assessing to cover the cost of insurance. All right. How did they actually do it? Well, the insurance specialist testified that with the approval of the insurance commissioner, he started with the operating cash requirements, the budget for the fiscal year. Then he projected the revenue they would receive, fines and license fees, etc., of course also paid by members of the insurance industry. Then, and they deducted that from their budget, the difference was the amount that they set out to assess to the insurers, the full budget. There was no effort to look to new programs or any programs particularly related to insurers. The move from one building to another, every expense, every employee of the insurance division's expense was included. But of course, no one really complained. So the next year it got a little bit bigger. Then in addition to including the entire cost of the insurance division, they added to that a proportion of the overhead of DCCA. And again, not targeted specifically to particular programs that affected the insurance division. To the contrary, the testimony on the record and set forth in our motion was that they took the percentage of the insurance division as a branch of the Department of Commerce and Consumer Affairs and took that same percentage of the DCCA budget. Of course, as they were building this reserve fund, the funds and the balance got larger and larger budget, and finance said, hey, what about us? So then they assessed the insurance division the fee that budget and finance charged them for managing their money. Again, the budget and finance did absolutely nothing to regulate insurers, to promote insurance regulation in any way. The budget and finance bill was also added to what the insurers were paying. And then, of course, the campaign to add a reserve margin that this court has already highlighted, the goal getting up to, you know, initially they had the lofty goal of 2 years reserve, then they thought, well, maybe a year and a half would be enough. But it's undisputed that the reserve was substantial, and the reserve was certainly not being used to regulate the insurance industry. It was not until they got caught by the legislature that we come before the court today. And what the insurance commissioner is asking this court to do is hold, so long as we don't get caught by the legislature again with too much money in our reserve account, as long as we don't get caught again, we want to be able to assess the insurance division, the insurance division wants to be able to assess the insurers the entire cost of regulation as they deem it. And we should figure out, if we think we're being assessed too much, apparently by some process similar to ESP or mental telepathy or something else, then we should file for a refund. On what basis, I do not know. Because we have no control over how they do it or when they do it. And that's the vice of the present system. This case does not fit anywhere within the San Juan cellular line of cases.
Ms. Mohler, before you get to that, I want to try to settle the question of jurisdiction. The state takes a position that you should have, one, either file the letter with the insurance commissioner and go through the process of it to the 91 child, or you were a person agreed that they should have filed the suit in that court.
First, of course, we believe that the court has jurisdiction for the reasons set out in our brief. There are multiple sources of jurisdiction to this court. This is an unconstitutional action. We're making claims of an unconstitutional action by an agency. Surely we have the right to do that. Let me address separately the exhaustion of remedies. They claim we should have exhausted our remedies. There was no remedy in this statute. You search in vain for a remedy in this statute. We called, we asked, in a declaration submitted to the trial court, we put forth that evidence that we could not find a remedy. And Judge Ahn, the circuit court, agreed there was no remedy in this statute. There was nothing to exhaust. And the circuit court agreed there was nothing to exhaust here. Secondly, with respect to the tax argument that we should have done, requested a tax refund, Your Honor, we were not assessed. That is my understanding of that provision is that it is designed to challenge a tax when you get a tax bill. And I've been before this court many, many years ago when the former insurers challenged the higher tax on foreign insurers than domestic insurers. And of course, we filed the tax protest, we put the amount in the tax fund, and then we proceeded with the litigation. That situation surely doesn't apply here. They're the ones bitterly complaining, this isn't a tax, this is a fee. You get a fee, you pay it. There's no procedure for us to have done that.
Wouldn't mind going ahead by listening to a question. And I think this is an extension of some of the arguments that you've just been making. At page 3 of your application, you assert that even if the San Juan cellular test were applied here, the assessments would still be a tax. Would you elaborate on that with respect to the entirety of the assessments, not merely what you suspect may be excess assessments?
With respect to the San Juan cellular test, it's a three-part test, as the court indicated earlier. And, I'm worried I'm going to lose some thoughts. So I'm going to answer something really quick here so I don't lose it for later. And then answer your question with respect to, obviously, the third prong of the test is the one that is a concern to the court. And that is, Your Honor, that in urging you to adopt the San Juan cellular test, I have to say that is the wrong line of cases to be using in this context. When this court decided Medeiros, certainly the San Juan cellular case was out there. But the court instead looked to two different lines of cases. It looked to a line of state cases, including the Emerson College case, where state courts were looking to make a determination as to whether their state agencies were going into the province of the legislature and taxing. The court also looked to federal court cases where federal courts were looking to see if federal agencies had exceeded their powers and gone into the congressional power to tax. Those were the cases that the court used. The San Juan cellular cases and those under it are not either of those categories. The San Juan cellular case is under the Butler Act, which is the equivalent of the Tax Injunction Act. And there the court is not looking to see whether someone exceeded their powers. They're making the determination based on the Tax Injunction Act as to whether something is a fee or a tax within the context of the overriding federal intent of that law that federal courts should not be interfering in state taxation. I do think context counts, and I think that in a way frames the test and argues why the cases that the court relied on in Medeiros were the right ones rather than San Juan. But turning to the third prong of the San Juan cellular test, those questions ask, and I want to get the language of it correctly, if you'll just a moment. Whether it provides a general benefit to the public of a sort often financed by a general tax, or whether it provides more narrow benefits to regulated companies or defrays the agency's cost of regulation. The dominant factor was that the money was not used for a general purpose. And I would suggest, Your Honor, that is exactly what happened here. I think if you look at San Juan Cellular and the various federal cases and other cases that have cited it, there is a program, there is a regulatory program for which money is assessed and spent. So, for example, you have the program to promote California apples, or you have a program for lead based paint or whatever. Not a single one of those cases says my regulatory program is the entire insurance division of the state of Hawaii. My regulatory program is the entire highways fund of it's the entire highways program of the state. My regulatory program is the environmental program or the hazardous waste program. None of those cases go even a fraction of the distance that this case does. The entire cost of the insurance division, proportion of DCCA, budget and finance, reserve, and then the money going over to the legislature. It is light years beyond any San Juan cellular case. And we're told today, it doesn't matter so long as the legislature doesn't take money. You don't get to know how we're doing it, and you don't get to complain. So the simplest way in these tight budget times is not to give the money to the general fund, because that's what we're trying to avoid here. They do the very sort of interagency transfers that they did in this case that don't go to the legislature, that don't show up anywhere. We had no idea that money, that $500,000 went to budget and finance. We had no idea that we were paying a third of the budget of DCCA. And this same transfer could be made to any other branch of government so long as the insurance commissioner said, there's some nexus between insurance and that branch of the governor's office, state policy office. As long as the legislature doesn't catch us, we can assess in any amount we want, and you can't ask us what we're doing or how we're doing it. That's the holding that you're being asked to give today. And I don't think that is consistent with San Juan Cellular. I think this case is a far closer to the Emerson College case decision on which this court relied. And
I'm sure San Juan does help in terms of the validity of the transfer from a special fund to the general fund, doesn't it?
It does indeed, Your Honor.
So for at least for purposes of the transfer, challenging the transfer, San Juan would be authority that supports your position.
Yes, it does.
What about Mr. Brennan's argument today? Although it wasn't raised below in the ICA or in the CERT application that you said, his contention is that, as a matter of fact, the expenditures for administering the insurance division exceeded the amount of the assessments, bus breakers, et cetera. How would you match that?
Your Honor, I apologize that I'm not prepared to cite a particular part of the record, but my recollection of the record is that the funds that went in came from other funds paid by insurers. They were insurance, they were from these very same people. And what counsel's argument asks you to believe is that funds are kind of paid in sort of a, I get last in, first out. You know, all of these transfers, we don't, so what their argument is the money that first went in, they never used. The money that first went in, they just set aside, and that was just like a little, you know, just, ooh, gee, maybe someday I'll need that, but I won't use it, I won't touch it. And that years later, when the legislature took the money, the legislature must have been taking this beginning money. Well, there's no support in the record for that. There's no way they could prove that or I could prove that. That's not what, there's nothing in the record that's there.
Justice Levinson said it's clear, though, that some of that money went into the general fund.
It's
the general fund's purpose is not to defray expenses for the insurance division.
Exactly. I think
your argument is could be viewed as a kind of subset of a larger beef, which is the transformation in 1999 of the DCCA into a wholly financially self-sufficient entity.
Yes, I think it could. It could, Your Honor. I think it's the unbridled discretion to determine what one's own self-sufficiency is that takes this case out of the regulatory realm. One has only to look to the testimony of the insurance specialist who, when determining what this assessment would be, said to his boss, if you want to increase our cash reserve even more than I estimated, please let me know by how much, and I will increase the total assessment to match the increase you want. That's troubling. That takes us back to the 1911 McCandless decision, where this court admonished that the regulator should not be able to just decide whatever it wants is the assessment and send out the bill.
So a part of your argument is that section 431.2.215 is unconstitutional.
Yes, Your Honor, that it is an unconstitutional, and this was raised below, that there was an unconstitutional delegation to tax. This is not the case, you know, there's much talk about all the special funds and the dire, terrible things that will happen. It's a different case where the legislature says, okay, we're going to have a gas tax, and that's 50 cents a gallon, and then that money goes into a special fund, and the highways division gets to use it. Someone, the legislature, decided what the fee would be. It goes there. This case is not that. This case, you're right. This case is the highways department says, I know what my budget is for the state highways. I know who uses the highways. I'm going to figure out how much I need.
And the legislature isn't going to give me any general revenue.
Yeah, see, and so the goal of this whole scheme is not to regulate the insurance industry. It's to avoid going back to the legislature for money. Self-sufficiency means I don't have to go back to the legislature. That's what self-sufficiency means. Don't come back.
Mr. Munger, what about the part of the statute which refers to assessing, making assessments to support or to help finance supporting offices and divisions, i.e. BMF and DCCA. What's your position on that? What's your challenge to that? If it's in the statute, is that okay?
No, Your Honor, it's my answer to that. That basically the statute in that respect is delegating the power to the insurance commissioner to tax us to support other government entities. There is no requirement here, the insurance commissioner never looked to see in what respects different agencies regulated insurance companies. That never happened. And there's a colloquy which we have in the record with Judge John. Well, how did you do it? How did you do it? How did you do it? There was never a time when they looked at that. And this harkens back to United States Supreme Court cases and the DC Circuit cases, which are regulating cable television, which the court relied on in the Madero's decision. And the import of those cases were you are doing it exactly backwards. If you take the entire budget of your agency, divvy it up, and send out the bill, you're not looking to what, if you're going to regulate the insurance division, you should know what it's not the whole budget, and it's not someone else's budget, and it's not another budget beyond that. That, I think, is our point. Because really, but for the legislature taking the money, we would never have known. Never have had an opportunity to review, to comment, to complain. That is the vice of the system here as well. Not simply that they amassed a fortune and got caught, but that they wanted to continue. That they want to continue to do that. And in that respect, I think we're closer factually. Not to the San Juan Cellular, but to the Emerson College case on which this court relied. You'll recall back to the Emerson College case that there the fire commissioner or fire chief decided that there should be a supplemental assessment for certain buildings in Boston that by their very nature required greater resources in the event of a fire. And
there still did make a distinction between a user fee and a regulatory fee.
Absolutely.
Emerson on its facts and Madero's on its facts are more akin to user types of situations, aren't they?
No, I don't believe so. And in fact, I think that because my understanding of user fees, and as I read it in the language of Madero's itself, is user fees are the proprietary fees. They're the water fees, the sewer fees.
No, the city argued in Madero's, if I recall correctly, that criminal defendants were the beneficiaries of the assessment because thanks to the criminal justice system, defendants were being given an opportunity at rehabilitation.
I like that part of the decision, Your Honor, and the discussion of that and the zoo and all.
And so the city seriously argued that what was at issue was a user fee.
Yeah, I don't really quite see how one could possibly say that case was a user fee.
You and I are both old enough to remember when the DCCA was not the DCCA,
but was the Department of Regulatory Agencies.
I do.
They may have changed the name of the department, but it's still, its portfolio is still to regulate agencies, is it not?
Yes.
For industries.
Yes.
And every cent that the DCCA spends is for the purpose of regulating industries, isn't that true? Including its own.
Right, exactly, yes.
And Emerson, the county was not regulating the fire department, was it?
The county was.
It was an ordinance which levied
a charge on others, exactly.
On building owners for the potential use of firefighters during a fire.
And I think that actually is what the court had ended up finally saying they didn't do. Because what the court said was they were looking to regulate because the system that the fire chief set up had, well, if you're in a certain size building and you need a certain amount of water for your fire, then we'll reduce that if you have alarm, if you have insulation, if you have other things. So the regulatory, it was indeed a regulatory component because they were trying to
Regulate, though, all the firemen did their job or what the qualifications would be.
No, and in fact, the money then went back to the fire.
The fees weren't being imposed on the fire department.
That's correct.
They were being imposed on the people who benefit from the work of the insurance company.
Right.
So you still say Emerson is like this case?
The respect, yes, I think that just as Emerson found that was a tax, this is a tax. This money is going not to those buildings, this money is going to the fire and to the police. That's where it went in Emerson. In this case, and part of what I think troubled the court there, just as it troubled this court in McCandless, is the total unbridled discretion to decide how it is they're going to do it, what they were going to do, and then the money went back to general revenue, fire and police. The money didn't go to these folks. This case is far beyond that. So in closing, Your Honor, members of the court, I would very much ask this court to affirm Judge Ahn's decision, to affirm the decision of the Intermediate Court of Appeals. I would ask this court not to listen to the sky is falling arguments. Madero's has been with us since 1999. McCandless has been with us since 1911. The sky has not fallen. And it troubles me deeply to think that the argument of the state here is that the way this fund did it was exactly right and should be permitted to continue. I would ask this court to consider that this was that what happened here is not serving a regulatory purpose. This is a tax, pure and simple. Is a tax in fees quoting.
Thank you. Your Honor, first, as Justice Levinson pointed out, DCCA regulates. The Constitution of the State of Hawaii permits DCCA to charge insurance companies for the cost of regulation. If they charge more than what is necessary to regulate, then they charge too much. But the Constitution allows us to assess them a regulatory fee up to and including the entire cost of the insurance division, and there is no way, shape, or form of that violates the Constitution. If the police power gives the state the ability to regulate the insurance industry, it has the power to assess a charge for the cost of regulation. With regard to the point about raising this issue on the transfer below, we won on that issue below. The Judge Ahn found that the transfers did not constitute anything illegal. So there was nothing on that point for us to raise in our opening brief that Judge Ahn made the wrong decision on that. But we had certainly raised this issue below. That's why we won I think, in part below. But in addition, if one looks at Judge Pollack's order, page 381 of volume 1 of the record, Judge Pollack in paragraph 24, Judge Pollack in paragraph 12 of his order made the specific finding that they were not going to be able to, paragraph 16 of his order, that they were not going to be able to show that this was their money. So while it's an issue that certainly could be taken up on remand, we won on this issue below, and we put all of these facts into the record. With regard to our issue on the refund and jurisdiction, there absolutely was a procedure pursuant to which the insurance companies had the ability to argue, you charged us too much. You charged us in excess of what is the reasonable cost of regulation under the statute. 431.7-203 specifically says, with regard to this charge, if any person has paid to the commissioner any tax, fee, or other charge in error or in excess of that which the person is lawfully obligated to pay, the commissioner, upon written request made by the person to the commissioner within the time set forth in another statute, shall authorize a refund, therefore, out of the compliance resolution fund. The insurance companies have argued that that doesn't set forth a sufficient procedure for them to follow. But what more do they need than a statute which says if you pay more than the law allows you to be charged, you get to file a written request for a refund with the commissioner within a particular time period? There is nothing mystical about that statute. And what Ms. Munger refers to, the declaration of her associate below at page 108 of volume 4 of the record, in its entirety, Mr. Clark says, in July 2002, I made calls to the DCCA to investigate the procedure for submitting a request for a refund of assessments. The DCCA employees with whom I spoke could not point me to any procedure to follow and could not even provide me with any guidance as to where to look for a procedure to follow. Entirely hearsay. Doesn't identify who he spoke to or how he identified himself or even whether he quoted the statute. But all of that is irrelevant. The statute is clear. If you've paid in contravention of the law or you've paid too much, file to get it back. And as we point out in our cert petition, Chapter 91 is by its terms applicable. You could have said to the commissioner, I want a hearing. Yes, you can't raise the issue. The entire statutory scheme is facially unconstitutional, which we hope this court rejects. But if what you're raising is the issue of we paid too much, it's not reasonable. It's not reasonably related to the cost of regulation. You've put in all of this fact that isn't in conformance with the statute. You charged us too much, and we're entitled to get money back. The entire law of administrative procedure is before you can come to court and complain to either the circuit court, the ICA, or this court that, in fact, you've paid too much and your pleas have gone unregarded, you at least have to go through the effort of putting in writing why you're entitled to more money, asking for a hearing, and if you lose, then you get the full panoply of the circuit court, the ICA, and this court. But having failed to do that, the plaintiffs cannot argue that they were charged too much other than by means of a facially unconstitutional statute. The regulations and statutes here were constitutional. We urge the court to adopt a variant of the San Juan cellular test, and we urge the court to rule that the plaintiffs failed to exhaust administrative remedies. Thank you very much.
Please rise. This Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii stands adjourned until further notice.